Invest Talk. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
On radio, on YouTube, streaming live on InvestTalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. This is our Wednesday, June 4th, 2025 edition of Invest Talk, and yeah, we're moving fast through the first half of the year. I mean, only a handful of weeks away until we get into the third quarter. Isn't that crazy? And it's what a year it's been so far. A lot of volatility, a lot of headlines, a lot of whipsawing. But this show is not about those headlines. It's about the facts on the ground. It's about finding the right investments for you, your goals, your risk tolerance level, etc. So each hour is about helping you become a better investor so that your eyes are wide open to the risks and rewards of everything that are out there, to avoid the pitfalls that plague so many investors, from becoming too emotional or buying into hype or maybe paralysis from analysis, where they don't make a decision because it just seems overwhelming. All of these are common pitfalls that people fall prey to. So we want to help you avoid those, as well as when you do make a decision, to capitalize on the opportunities that are out there. So that's what the show is about. So this hour is about, and we accomplish this by answering your finance investment questions and then bringing you actionable material, data, perspective, so that you can take it back to your own personal situation and make better decisions. That's what this hour is about. So in a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics. But as usual, we'll tackle this first caller question now.
Hi, Justin and Luke. My name is James, calling from Salt Lake City, Utah. First off, great show. I learned a lot from you two. Second, could you tell me your fundamental thoughts on Omnicom Group? Ticker is OMC, Oscar Martin Charlie. The chart is hideous, and it seems like they have a lot of debt, but it looks like they have a cash flow to cover, and the fundamentals look decent. Just curious your thoughts. Thanks again, and keep the great work.
All right. I love this call because it is, he touched on a lot of aspects to consider, and my favorite one is that it has a lot of debt. Let me confirm that. It's a decent amount of debt, of only about $4 billion in net debt on a $14 billion market cap. That's not crazy, to be honest with you. Its times interest earned is at 15. So I don't really see any issues there. Its free cash flow, $1.4 billion, which is solid, but it is well down from its peak in 2021 at $2.5 billion. Now that was kind of an anomaly. You know, we had that big inflationary environment. But if you even go back to 2019, pre-pandemic, its free cash flow was closer to 1.8, 1.9, up to 2 billion in 2017. And now we're at 1.4. So if you throw out, you know, kind of the wild period in 2021, 2022, even 2023, and look kind of you put a line through the trend, it is still negative over the last decade. Because in December, in the fourth quarter of 2015, it was at about $2 billion, and it's really just stair-stepped lower. And for everyone else out there, what does Omnicom do? Is they provide advertising, customer relations management, public relations, and communication services. So It's an ad agency. Well, what's happening with the ad environment? It's becoming more digital. And, you know, these are the type of companies that run big magazine campaigns and TV ads and public relation announcements, things like that. Public relations and all of that PR is, in a lot of ways, it's on Twitter, it's on social media. You know, you don't need an official announcement as much as you used to. So I just think their need for their business is declining, and you're seeing that in the overall business trends. Okay, so you know what's keeping them kind of alive or afloat when it comes to earnings is the fact that they're taking that cash flow and they're buying back shares. That's where the growth is coming from. Okay, if you look last quarter, revenues were up 2%. Earnings were up 2%. And that's in an environment where if you add total nominal GDP growth, it's well in excess of 2% over the, you know, and so that's the issue. Is you're seeing growth slow, you're seeing the demand for their business slow. It's just not, and that's why the chart is so bad. So listen to the chart. Listen to the chart. Chart's telling you something. And the underlying fundamentals, while you know their legacy business is very profitable, their profitability metrics are declining. In 2019, this is a perfect example, return on equity was 44.8%. Today, it's now down to 29%. It's been trending lower ever since the pandemic started. And unless you think that's going to reverse, think we're going to go back to pre-net 2019 type of economic environment, then it's just not a name that I would be playing with. So I'm passing on Omnicom. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes. And our main focus point is about the aviation industry and some trends and profitability, not just here domestically, but worldwide as well. So we'll look at that story. Also, some good news out of the 401k space. There's new data from Fidelity, and obviously, I believe they're the largest or one of the largest 401k plan providers out there. And so they get a good viewpoint on the retirement picture for workers in the United States. And so they put out a report, and we're going to dig into those details to, I think, get a gauge of the broader economy, the broader savings environment, and where you might stack up in comparison. And then lastly, if we have time, we're going to talk about why it's more difficult for these foreign buyers of treasuries. And hint, it has to do with the currency market. So we'll look at that story. We also have voice bank calls. One is on Roth IRAs. The other is on American Financial Group, AFGC. And then we have questions that came in via the comment section over on our YouTube channel as well. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions right now. So don't hesitate to reach out, but we're going to head into a short break. And on the other side, I'll talk about today's market activity, take more of your questions on the InvestTalk Anytime listener line as well. And that number is always 888-99-CHART.
Okay, got to get serious with my finances. I've been working a long time, and I know there's still got to be more that I can do to build my wealth quicker. I don't want to have to work forever.
If you are not maximizing your employer-sponsored retirement plan, KPP Financial can help. With our professional oversight, you can potentially enhance your investment performance by an average of 3% annually. At KPP Financial, we provide a comprehensive 401k management program designed to optimize your retirement savings. Our approach includes creating custom investment allocations tailored to your goals and risk tolerance. That can make a big difference in your favor.
Maybe it's time to tune up my retirement plan.
For more information on how you can take control of your retirement savings, visit our website, kppfinancial.com.
KPP Financial. Sounds good.
Have you heard about the new InvestTalk store? That's right. You'll find great merch for the savvy investor. It's all there for you now at InvestTalkStore.com. And now Justin Klein is here and taking your finance and investment questions live. call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Let's go take a look at the market today, and it was a flat day. The S&P was up half a point, one basis point. So not a whole lot doing there. Tesla was the biggest drag, down 3.5%. Palantir also down about 2.4%. Broadcom was up. They do have earnings, I believe, tomorrow. I don't know. I'm not sure if it's before the bell or after the bell. Meta was up 3%, definitely the strongest in the of the Mag 7 names. Google up 1%. Most of the other names are roughly flat. Definitely weakness in the banking sector. You had weakness in utilities. You had weakness in the energy markets with oil down a bit. And it was really all about the economic data that came out today. And there were two main pieces that moved markets and moved treasuries in a bullish manner. Treasuries on the back end of the curve, they were down 10 to 11 basis points. So you saw rates fall pretty significantly on the back end of the curve. The 10-year note is down to 4.36%. Okay. And the 2-year, that's roughly flat. But overall, it does look like the Fed has a little bit more ammo to cut rates. ADP payroll. So we had a lot of labor data this week. So yesterday was JOLTS. That came in better than expected, job openings. Today, we had ADP payroll, which usually is a fairly good indicator of what we're going to get Friday, which is non-farm payroll, the official government number. Remember, ADP, this is ADP, the public company that runs payroll for millions of businesses. So they have a pretty good view of what's happening with the broader economy. And they saw only 37,000 jobs added versus the consensus was supposed to be 130,000 jobs. And then April, that number was revised down from 62 to 60,000. Not a big move there, but still negative. And you aren't seeing a build in things like manufacturing. That was down 3,000 jobs. Trade, transportation, and utility services, that was down 4,000 jobs. Natural resources and mining, that was down 5,000 jobs. That's where the weakness was, as well as professional and business services. The strength came in things like leisure and hospitality, financial activities, information, so think tech, and then construction was up 6,000 jobs. So definitely weaker than expected. Now, I don't think that was the weakest number. To me, the weakest number in a while of any number I've seen is the ISM Services Index that came out today. Remember, Monday we had ISM Manufacturing Index. That was okay. Nothing really to write home about. Remember, manufacturing now is 10, 11% of our broader of our economy. It's not a lot. ISM is the vast majority of our economy. The services is the vast majority of our economy. And that came in at 49.9. Consensus was expecting 52.2. So an increase from April's 51.6. Instead, it went down. Anything below 50 is contraction. So we were in slight contraction on the services side. Like I said, down to 49.9, mainly driven by new orders. The price index also was higher than expected. Went from 65.1 to 68.7. So kind of a stagflationary print on that side. The brightest spot there was the employment side did tick up from 49 to 50.7. So that kind of was counter to the ADP number, but still 50.7, not great, kind of still stuck in neutral right around that 50 mark. And so that's what really moved the market, and mainly the bond market, and that's why rates dropped. You did see gold finish up 0.7%, dollar was down 0.4%. Bitcoin still is not breaking out. This is another kind of in order for me to be excited about the S&P breaking above 6,000 and sustaining that, I think Bitcoin's going to have to get on its horse and start to move, because that is a liquidity proxy. And unless that's really breaking out, it tried to break out, went to a 111. So all-time high, broke above the earlier year high, which was 107 in that range, 106, 107. So attempted to break out. Now it's failed. It's not failed completely because it's still kind of around the 105 level. But if it breaks 100, I think that's an indication that liquidity is tightening up and could be a leading indicator of where the broader equity markets are going. So I continue to watch that. And the fact that it was down today, 1.2%, was interesting. WTI did settle down 0.9% as well. So we still kind of staying in this, you know, high 50s, low 60s range for oil, and something I will continue to be watching. So that was the market today. Not a whole lot. We tested that 6,000 mark on the S&P, and we closed at 59.71. And so still below that level, and still a lot of data here over the next couple of days. And we'll know a lot more about the labor market and the broader economy. Now we're moving into a break. Our InvestTalk phone lines are open, ready for you. Whatever's on your mind, money related, I encourage you to reach out at 888-99-CHART. And hang on, my focus point is coming up next.
Got a question for Justin or Luke? You're the best person to ask it.
Quick question. What are some signs of that a recession is coming?
Is there any lesson for people who own stocks, even if they don't short a stock, that the stock they own, they should know whether it's been heavily shorted?
InvestTalk is ready 24/7.
If this gets to 170 to 175 in that range, that's where I'd pick it up.
Awesome. Thank you, Justin. I appreciate it.
I'm hoping you'll give me your take on Ormat Technologies, ORA. Curious if you think it'd be better for me to let it go and spend money elsewhere.
I'm a new investor, and your podcast has helped me out a lot.
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART, or post your questions on the InvestTalk YouTube channel.
...2025 rolls on, and you've got finance and investment questions for Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, my main focus point today is in regards to the airline industry, okay? And this is a new report coming from the International Air Transport Association. And they're seeing improved profitability across the industry this year. And that's despite the global slowdown in economic growth from about 2.5% from 3.3% last year. So they are seeing the global economy slowing, but profits still rising within that industry. What's interesting, though, is that in many cases, it's still down from where they started the year. You know, most of the year has passed, or most of the first half has passed. And so they have a little more color to profitability. And they came into the year very bullish, and they're still bullish, but a little more tempered. So I thought that was interesting. Net profits for the industry are expected to come in at $36 billion, up from $32.4 billion last year. But December, they projected this year's total profits to be $36.6 billion. So, you know, those growth expectations have been tempered just a bit. And then net profits forecasted to be 3.7% from 3.4% from the previous year. So expanding margins, that's always good. That's a big driver of multiple expansion and profit growth for a lot of industries, if you can expand those margins in some way, shape, or form. Total revenue is expected to hit a record high, $979 billion, but that's still down a little bit from the $1 trillion that was expected at the end of last year. The big tailwind for the whole industry, jet fuel costs. The cost per gallon of jet fuel is expected to drop from $99 last year to $86. The low oil prices certainly helping that industry as a whole. But what's interesting is the growth is not really coming from the United States. It's actually coming from the Asian region. So Asia Pacific region set to see the largest demand growth this year. Revenue per passenger projected to grow 9% year on year. So if you don't have exposure, if you're an airline and you don't have exposure to the Asian market, you're not really growing. You know, we've seen the demand for travel to the United States come down, and a lot of those foreigners, think Canadians, Europeans, they're shifting their demand to Asia in a big, big way. And so that's part of it. Another is relaxation of visa requirements by a lot of Asian countries. China, Vietnam, Malaysia, and Thailand. They all relaxed their requirements for moving about that region. Now, they are noting that China and their economic challenges has lowered their overall demand a little bit, or at least their trajectory. So they are seeing some economic weakness out of China. But, you know, I think this is an interesting report because it tells a story about where think of travel. People travel for two reasons. They have excess cash and it's for pleasure, or it's for business. And if people aren't moving about via air, they're probably not feeling either very confident about their personal financial situation and their disposable income, or their business, and you know, they don't see prospects of traveling and getting more business. And so, you know, this is something that I like to follow to see what these, you know, this is a microcosm, but it does tell you a lot. It's kind of like if you go talk to FedEx or UPS, they have a strong pulse on the movement of goods within the world and what are their volumes looking like. And so it's not just about moving packages, it's about moving people. And this report tells you a lot about the trends globally. Now let's pivot over and touch on a YouTube comment question. And JDude88 says, "Hi guys, interested to hear your thoughts on stock Teradyne. T-E-R is the symbol, Teradyne. And for everyone else out there, Teradyne is about $13 billion market cap. It's down pretty significantly, 50% down from its 52-week high. It was at 160 back in last summer. Now it's at 80. And what do? Is they manufacture integrated circuit test systems for automotive, communication, consumer, and gaming markets and electronic markets. And so earnings in 2021 were all-time high, $5.96. Now that's kind of an anomaly. You kind of throw that out. A lot of earnings around that time in 2021, especially for physical product type of companies, really most consumer-facing companies, you kind of have to throw out. It's kind of like comps if you're trying to analyze the value of a property, you throw out the highest and the lowest and you see kind of what's in the middle. And I think you have to do that with these earnings reports. So that was kind of an all-time high. It came down to $2.92 in 2023, bounced up to $3.22 last year, was supposed to be flat this year at $3.20. And it's trading at a 24 multiple. Now, earnings are supposed to bounce back next year, but the chart is not telling me that that is going to come to fruition. The technicals are just too poor. Relative strength is 9. I'm not really seeing anything on the chart that's telling me that this is going to turn around in the short term. So I'm passing on Teradyne. I like the business. I just don't like those earnings trends. So I'm going to give Teradyne just stay on the sidelines for now. Now, next Invest Talk, we'll look into this topic: what homeowners need to know before borrowing against home equity. That story is for tomorrow, but give me a call now at 888-99-CHART.
The Invest Talk phone lines never close. And now, Justin Klein is here taking your calls live. Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
Hello, guys. I have a question.
No matter what our day looks like, I think we can agree that we all need nourishment that fuels us, right? So let me tell you about Kachava's Whole Body Meal Shakes. I'm really liking them. And bonus surprise, the Kachava Shakes come in 5 delicious flavors: chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, coconut acai. Variety is a good thing. And it's easy to incorporate Kachava's Whole Body Meal Shakes into my daily routine. I like to personalize my Kachava by adding nice touches like frozen blueberries, almond milk, creatine. For me, the idea is to mix it up while keeping my body and mind nourished all day. In fact, Kachava is a whole body meal with plant-based protein that actually tastes delicious. In those 5 indulgent flavors I mentioned, you get 25 grams of 100% plant-based protein with every 2 scoops of Kachava. You get 85 plus superfoods, nutrients, and plant-based ingredients. Kachava is non-GMO, There are no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. There's no soy, no animal products, no gluten, and no preservatives. You can even try Cachava risk-free with their Love It guarantee. Fuel your day with Cachava. Go to Cachava.com and use code INVEST for 15% off on their subscription for a limited time. That's Cachava, K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com, code INVEST for 15% off.
Roth IRA, I know after the 5 years of having the account open, you can go ahead and withdraw your actual investment. But I was wondering, if you have dividend stocks within that profile, when you receive those dividends after 5 years, can you also withdraw those? Thank you.
No, it's only the contributions to your Roth IRA. Remember, dividends are part of the return profile of equity investments. It's not just capital appreciation, it's dividends as well. And so just because they're paying you a dividend doesn't mean that doesn't count as a contribution. So Roth IRAs are become more popular. I think that's great because of that kind of rainy day fund that it's easy to make them into after 5 years. And you can go and take that money, still invest it while you're waiting and living your life. And if anything bad happens, you can go and take that money out. And so that's a great thing, a great feature of Roth IRAs. But no, the dividends do not count as contributions. And that's not part of what you can take out tax and penalty free. Now let's drop in another YouTube channel comment question. And Matt says, hi, InvestDoc. I'm looking to expand my emerging market exposure. I like that. I already hold positions in India and Mexico, and now considering FLBR ETF for access to the Brazilian market. And he says, I know Brazil can be volatile and some political headwinds, but I believe there's strong long-term potential, especially if a more market-friendly president is elected next year. Would love to hear your take. Well, I wouldn't hold your breath and say that and think that a more market-friendly president will be elected, especially if you look globally, more populist presidents generally are elected. I know the Milei in Argentina is kind of the anomaly there, but overall, you are seeing more populist presidents and leaders throughout the world. So I wouldn't bet on that, but I think it's more of a play on commodities. You know, these emerging market countries, especially ones that have a lot of exports of raw materials, they tend to, their currencies tend to fluctuate, their equities tend to fluctuate based on the price of the raw commodities that they are exporting. So if they're very oil focused, then whether oil is up or down, that's going to help or hurt them. So that's the way I would think about exposure to FLBR. Now, is it really what you want to be in? You know, there's good diversity there. There are some financial services. That's 26% of this ETF. That's the highest weighting. Basic materials around 14%. Energy around 17%. So you're getting some good exposure there. Industrials around 13%. I don't mind the makeup of this particular ETF. It leans more large cap value. I like that. And let me look at the trends, because while this is FLBR, this is the Franklin FTSE Brazil ETF. There's also EWZ, that's the iShares Brazil ETF. I'm not sure if it covers the exact same stocks yet. It does look very similar. This one's a little more financial service focused, 36% there. So yeah, I kind of like the FLBR a bit more than EWZ. And I do think FLBR has a lower expense ratio as well. So if I'm picking between EWZ, which is the most popular, and FLBR, FLBR would be the one that I would want exposure to. Thanks for the question. Now let's touch on 401ks. Some new data coming out of Fidelity, and the average savings rate now is at a record high, 14.3% of income in the first 3 months of this year. That's the average savings rate from U.S. workers that have Fidelity as their plan provider. Okay. Now, that's just under the 15% annual savings rate that most advisors, including ourselves, recommend you should have. Now, that includes, that's not just your contribution, but it's your contribution plus whatever the employer matches. So make sure you're getting about 15% or more into your 401k. Now, the average in 2020 was 13.5%. So it's gone from 13.5 to 14.3. How did we get there? Just to back up before I get to that point, savings rate includes the 4.8% contribution from employers. So that's the average contribution from the employer. So basically, the average contribution from the employee is 9.5. The average contribution from the employer is 4.8. So you can see kind of how that stacks up against your particular situation. Now, in the first quarter, 17.4% of people with a 401k at Fidelity increased their savings rate. That's pretty good. Nearly one in five. 5% decreased. So 17.4 increased, 5% decreased, and 1% stopped saving altogether. That's a pretty good ratio. Tells you kind of where workers are at and how much more they feel comfortable saving. Now, higher earners generally have to save more. So remember that. And on average, boomers, baby boomers, save 17.2% of their pay. Gen X puts around 15.4% away. And millennials save around 13.5%. So you can see kind of how you stack up based on your generation. Now, once again, how do we get here? First is, now 70% of private sector workers have access to a 401k of some type of or similar type of plan, 403b, et cetera. And more companies are auto-enrolling people. That's how they're getting to these higher numbers and getting people to save more. So they're not just automatically enrolling, but they're also auto-escalating as well. More than a third of companies that use automatic enrollment started at 5% or higher. So that's a good start. You add that to the 4.9 on average match, you're talking about nearly 10% starting place. That's a pretty good least start for most, especially younger workers. The historical norm was 3%. So now those automatic contributions are coming in at 5% typically. And then the auto escalation happens by adding 1% annually until they reach around 10%. So it's automatically, you get a raise, 2, 3, 4%, 5%, whatever that is, 1% that goes to your 401k. You don't even feel it because you're still getting a raise, just doesn't feel as much as maybe it actually was, but it's increasing your savings rate. And so that's helping as well. So I love these stats. I love giving you good news. There's so many headlines that are about bad news and risks that are out there. This is overall a good thing. Employers are putting in plans, showing that these auto escalation and auto enrollment plans are working, and savers are continuing to up their allocation and feel comfortable with the job prospects, their financial situation to keep that going. So that's great news. Now let's keep things moving and pivot back to the InvestTalk Voice Bank. You know the number. It's always 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Justin and Luke. This is Paulo from Gaithersburg. I'm invested in AFG, American Financial Group. I like the insurers, but I actually came across their bond, AFGC. Could you please elaborate on that bond and if it's a good investment? I mean, the yield, of course, is intriguing, but I really like the company, and I think investing in bonds issued by that company might be a good idea. I'm looking forward to hear your opinion on the show. Long-time listener, and I always enjoy watching and listening to the show and hearing your advice. Thank you so much. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks for the call. Let's take a look at AFG and AFGC, which looks to be one of their bonds. Let me take a look here. Does it have a maturity? Is this one of those perpetual bonds? No. Oh, it's a very long-term bond. 2059 is the expiration here. That would be my worry, is that long term duration. And it's going to fluctuate based on the underlying trends in the bond market. And this has been trending lower ever since it really came out. Let me go back here. All year. Say that. It started the year, or at least December, around $22. Now it's down to 18 and change, 18.37 at the close today. So it's in a downtrend because it's a long, long-term bond. Talking over 30 years, 34 years until this thing matures. I do not love that. I do not love that at all. Not only that, but it's subordinated. So this, I'm not sure, it looks like a subordinated bond. So you don't have seniority against other shareholders. So I think you might be chasing the yield here. It's trading under par. Its coupon is 5.12%. So you're getting a high dividend, but I just don't think that, or high interest rate, you're just not getting, you're gaining too much exposure to a very long duration asset. And I want to avoid that. I want to avoid that in a big, big way. So I would not be owning this. I rather own the underlying stock. The underlying stock isn't most exciting. It's a property and casualty insurer. It's fine. And this is American Financial Group, AFG, $10 billion market cap. I rather own the underlying equity. I wouldn't want to own this name. Thanks for the call. Now, I'm here now and happy to take your live calls during the 4 to 5 Pacific time hour. But while we wait for a live call, let's go ahead and play another fresh listener question.
Hey, Justin. Just had a question on the stock Wendy's. The symbol is WEN. I bought the stock, about 2,000 shares, on June 2nd. And it says if you hold the stock until June 16th, it'll pay a dividend of 14 cents. Do you have to hold the stock the whole entire time from June 2nd to the 16th? Or can you sell it and then rebuy at the stock at a lower price and still get the same dividend depending on how many shares you have on the 16th? And then is it as simple as, like, let's say you got 1,000 shares and it's 14 cents each. That means you're going to get like $140 on the 16th. I'll listen for the answer on the podcast. Thank you very much. Bye.
Well, your calculation is correct. Yeah, that's how much you would get if you had 1,000 shares. It's 14 cents a share. That's what you're going to get, $140 on the 16th. So that, not a huge yield, but it's something. And when it comes to whether you're going to get the dividend, it's all about the X date. Did you own it on the X date? Meaning through the previous day, you market closed, you still own it. And on the open the next day, you still own that stock. You get that dividend. You are eligible to receive that dividend. You will get that dividend. Whether you sell the stock after that or not, you can even sell it on the X date. You're still going to get that. You are a shareholder of record when the stock goes X. So you don't have to wait if you don't want to. You'll get the dividend no matter what if you held it on that X day, into that X day. Okay. X dividend day, shall we say. Thanks for the call. Now, the reason why the treasury market is struggling to a degree. Now, I think it's a bit overblown. I'll start off with that. But there are factors that really change whether foreign buyers can own our treasuries. And a big variable here is the currency. So typically when foreign governments, foreign pension funds, insurers, etc., they go and buy treasuries, they're hedging out the currency risk because the worry, remember, a pensioner, an insurance company, they're paying out their customers in their local currency. If it's a Japanese insurance company, they're paying out their claims in yen. And so if they're taking their yen and they're going to buy a U.S. treasury, then they're going to have to hedge that currency risk that the dollar falls. Okay. And so what you're seeing now with the dollar going down, This is making it very expensive for the treasury buyers to hold U.S. treasuries. And so if you look at like Eurozone buyers, they're actually, after hedging out currency risk, they're getting a negative 0.6% yield compared to things like the German 10-year bond, which has no currency risk because it's priced in the euros. And it's even worse if you look at other countries within the euro region. And so it just makes it less attractive for those entities to go buy U.S. treasuries. Where before, when the dollar was strong, there wasn't a whole lot of worry that the dollar was going to continue to depreciate against that local currency. They were still earning positive yield. Same with Japan. But now Japan is even worse. Their 10-year yield currency hedged return will be negative 1.3% below the alternatives within the country, because rates there have gone up recently. And so the IMF shows that Japanese banks, pension funds, and insurers have dumped about $331 billion of treasuries over since the start of the year. So that's a factor you have to consider when you're looking at whether it makes sense for these foreign buyers to continue to buy treasuries, and will the treasury market stay functional. As of now, it's only been marginal, but obviously it could accelerate to the downside. Now we're heading into our final break. Give me a question. Get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many factors. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi guys, this is Kevin from California. In the recent podcast, I heard Justin saying that small caps might not be the best place to allocate your investment money. I have a fairly large position in a small cap value ETF called AV as in Victor, UV as in Victor. I'm down a little bit on that, and I'm wondering if I should start to take some of that part of my portfolio and move it into some other areas that I have smaller positions in, maybe some foreign stocks or more gold. This part, I don't have, you know, the small cap value. I don't have a lot of time to research in small individual companies. Just wondering your thoughts on AVUV and whether or not I should start moving that position into something else. Thanks.
All right, looking at AVUV, and historically this is a pretty good fund. Its 5-year percentile ranking is 6, meaning it's better than 94% of other small cap funds that are out there. So over the longer term, it's doing, you know, very well. But recently, it's been struggling, not just against the broader market, but its competitors as well, its peers. Its year-to-date performance is negative 7%, which is in the 67 percentile. So the vast majority of other small cap funds are outperforming it. And, you know, that's kind of a near-term issue. And maybe a lot of this has to do with those of a value tilt. Higher interest rates are weighing on a lot of these smaller names. They have levered balance sheets, and they can struggle, especially when the economy is slowing. A lot of them have exposure to the tariff situation, et cetera. So I would, if it was me, I would take this capital. Remember, it's all about the opportunity costs. And when you have capital in something like this, like you said, should you increase your gold position? I don't know what your gold position is. Obviously, gold is trending well. I think the fiscal situation puts a lot of tailwinds behind the precious metal market in general over the medium and long term. So if you feel like you're underweight there, this could be a good source of capital for that space. Or the foreign markets. Foreign markets are doing much better than our domestic markets, especially the small cap market as well. And that will likely continue. So if those are two areas you feel like you're underweight, then this would be a good source, despite that it is a good long-term ETF, you can always go buy it back later when the trends are in their favor. You know, this is the type of fund from a timing perspective that you much rather own coming out of a recession. Probably it's going to do very, very well in that type of environment versus right now when, you know, we're late cycle. Could the cycle continue? Sure, absolutely. There's no reason why it can't continue, but it's we're in the seventh, eighth, maybe ninth inning of this economic expansion. And we have a liquidity dynamic that is getting more challenging, as I said this for a while, that in the back half of this year and into next year. And is this maybe a canary in the coal mine? The fact that it's underperforming so much when historically it's been a good performer, I think that is something to think about. But I do think this is a good source of capital for other areas that are outperforming and likely will continue to outperform for the at least the medium term. Thanks for the call. And I love the way you're thinking and kind of trying to assess your options in this market. And that's what everyone needs to do. We all need to do that, is assess your options and understand that you might be down. It might not look great right now, right? You might be trying to get back to the highs. That's what a lot of people do, right? Oh, I'm down. It wasn't this. I wanted to get back to that before I sell it. That is a amateur way of thinking. So I like that you're willing to recognize the recent trends that are not in your favor and starting to assess the options that are in front of you. And I think there are better options than this fund. I'm Justin Klein. This completes another InvestTalk program. We thank you for listening. And we encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. And if anything on today's show made you think about your own financial picture, investments, taxes, retirement, all of your goals, and whether your current investment allocation is right for this type of market environment, let's talk about it. We offer free portfolio reviews to help bring clarity and confidence to your overall financial picture. Just head over to investtalk.com and click on the portfolio review button. Independent thinking, shared success. It's InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.